Today's episode of the Back-to-Back Podcast is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks in any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, Tesla, for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimum. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with a free stock by going to backtoback.robinhood.com. That's backtoback.robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice, a recommendation, or a solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield, APY, on uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank.
Welcome to the Back-to-Back Podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Lock it in!
There's like someone drilling next door to me right now. Can you hear it?
Congratulate them on the sex.
This is the Basketball Buzz.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Logic and Reason.
With Zach Harper.
Oh man, if you put Gordy in Atlanta, we can kiss Waz goodbye from Los Angeles.
Big Waz.
Kristen's beautiful words about pop are the best advertisement for the CIA that I've ever heard in my entire life.
Funny, I've seen the machine in the basement of Madison Square Garden churning out $100 bills.
Yeah, this isn't for we. This is a lifetime achievement award. Right now, that he's getting.
I've been wanting to say that for a long time.
South will rise again. I'll say that much.
I'm just going to tell you what I think.
I don't think it's inconsistent.
I would apologize for all the physical and mental abuse
the whole time we were here.
You've been popped, right?
Yes.
He may have big bones, but he doesn't have big meniscus.
What? Why would I wear pants or shorts or anything?
Everyone does well when you have good results.
Produced by Jade Hoy.
My mic on?
A lot of women have pictures in the dating apps with Jeff Goldblum.
It's enough of a thing that Jeff Goldblum has commented on.
Right, if they get caught, he gets thrown in jail.
The mecca of basketball.
Are you making calls for Fred Katz?
Because Katz has been killing it. I don't know if he's that good.
This is a journey into time.
Everybody knows if you go back in time,
don't do anything.
The ramifications can be quite severe.
A journey which along the way will bring to you new colors, new dimensions, new
what's up, buddy?
Sound like I know what I'm talking about. Welcome to the Back-to-Back Podcast on the old Athletic Podcast Network. This is the Basketball Buds Edition. I'm Zach Harper, joined by Dave Dufour, Wozni Lambre. We may be joined by John Krasinski later. And, of course, we have our Celtics scribe, our Celtics insider, Jay King, join us today. Jay, what's going on in Shamrock basketball land?
Well, they stunk for three straight games.
Yeah, get them out of here, right? They're terrible.
They're just blowing out crappy teams.
Oh, they're good again.
So, yeah, they've gone from bad to good again in the last week.
How did they get good again?
I think, honestly, the schedule was they had five games in seven nights. And I just think they got sloppy during that. And Kemba didn't play one of the games. He was ejected one of the games, which was wild. A beer was thrown on the court. I didn't know what was happening when the beer got thrown on the court. I just saw something explode, like all of a sudden, I just saw something like pop into the air, and it turned out to be truly hard seltzer. But I didn't know what it was at first. And Tim Bontemps is on my side, like screaming, "Oh my god! He threw it from the upper deck! He threw it from the upper deck, kid!
What a snitch!"
And
did someone actually throw it from the upper deck?
Oh yeah,
there's no way.
Yeah,
no,
it was like Henry Rowan Gardner.
Oh my god!
John Corrales actually went up and like took a photo from there.
Yeah,
the person had an arm. He might be Brady's replacement next year. I heard
it was honestly Henry Rowan Gardner. Like rookie of the year, that movie.
Actually, I could see John having that kind of arm. John's a big dude. John's an athlete. Mm-hmm. Like, I think John. Do we know if John Corrales threw it?
I think we can rule out Corrales. He was in the media section at the time. He has a good alibi.
So he says. So he says.
You know, this kind of reminds me of Summer League when the freaking earthquake happened, and my first instinct was that there was a live shooter.
That's what you thought? Oh, because people were rushing out?
Yeah, because people were running. I was like, wait.
I told you my earthquake story, right? When I didn't know there was an earthquake?
Vegas, so the day before, because it was an earthquake the day before.
No, day before I knew, because that shook my apartment. But no, this was the one in Vegas in the arena. Because that was during Zion's game, right? And so Zion gets ruled out for the rest of the game. And so I left. I was like, all right, I don't want to watch this anymore. I got to get out of here. And so I left. So I had just left the arena. And then all of a sudden, like a minute later, as I'm walking towards the Uber line, all these people come rushing out of the building. And I didn't feel the earthquake. So I just thought, oh, everyone's got the same idea I do. They all just don't want to watch the rest of this game either. I had no idea until I got in the Uber and the driver was like, man, that earthquake was crazy. I was like, what earthquake?
I was in the casino at one of the restaurants, I think Holstein's Burgers. And I'm like, rad, I'd never seen an earthquake before. I'd never experienced it before. And so the chandeliers go crazy. Like they're rocking back and forth. I think I'm going to die. And the restaurant starts celebrating. And I'm like, what is going on? Like West Coast people with their knowledge of earthquakes and their coolness with earthquakes is just weird.
By the way, speaking as a fellow East Coaster, yeah, they're insane with that.
It's just not a big deal.
Freak out.
It's just the earth.
Because it's not the 70s anymore. Like everything's retrofitted. So like the idea that a building's going to come down from an earthquake, like it would have to be an apocalyptic earthquake.
I mean, there were the most enormous chandeliers in Vegas there, and I was pretty sure they were coming down on my head.
No, man, those things are up there for good. Couldn't cut those down with a chainsaw.
And everyone else is just celebrating, thanks, like clapping and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, you guys are lunatics.
Speaking of shaking the earth, guys, the Boston Celtics are going to try to shake up the NBA world Thursday night. They're hoping that the Knicks can give the Milwaukee Bucks a run tonight and wear them out a little bit. But Thursday, Boston goes to Milwaukee. This is a huge test for Boston. Obviously, they haven't done well against Philadelphia this year. But against another hopeful, well, I guess Philadelphia's not really a power at this point anymore. But against the power in the East, the Milwaukee Bucks. Jay, how did they take down Giannis and company?
In game one, they threw Marcus Smart at Giannis. And I don't know how sustainable that is. I don't know if that will work over time because Giannis has him by, 7 inches and 50 pounds. But it worked in their first game in the opening week of the season. They need to be super quick. They need to be super sharp. They need to be locked in on the ball defensively. I think if they beat the Bucks, and I'm not just talking about one game, but if they end up meeting the Bucks in a series, they have to hope that all four of their top guys, and then Marcus Smart, the fifth, even though he's not as big a scorer, they have to hope that those are number two through five or six in the series. They have to hope that Middleton doesn't kill them like he always does, and they have to hope that they take away the guys like George Hill and Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton. Like they need those guys to be much better than the Bucks role players. And that wasn't the case during the playoffs last year when they met. And Giannis is obviously going to be the best player in that series. But the Celtics need to have the next handful of best players to have a chance against the Bucks in a 7-game series.
Do you think we know the blueprint for beating the Bucks? Yes. You got to shoot the lights out from three. And you got to make them miss. That's it. That's the key. That's the only way to beat the Bucks.
That sounds like basketball, dude.
That's right. But that's the only, literally the Bucks are the embodiment of make or miss league. If they're hitting their threes, they're going to win. If they're missing and you're not hitting, they're going to win. If you're hitting and they're missing, that is the one way you can beat the Bucks. That's how they've lost every game that they've
lost.
This
sounds like you just did like a whole Rosie Perez white man can't jump. Sometimes when you win, you really lose. Sometimes you lose, you really win. Sometimes you win or lose, you actually tie. Sometimes you tie, you actually win or lose.
Sometimes when you tie, you actually win or lose.
Yeah, but the truth is you have to make your threes and they have to miss them. They can't hit those threes. So, you know, the Celtics have, you know, they've been okay from behind the 3-point line, but they have to get hot in order to actually beat them. And that isn't even, you know, about the playoffs.
Marcus Smart has to stop shooting. I'm done with this thing. He can't shoot anymore. I get the reason they need him to, but they have Jaylen Brown can shoot. Jason Tatum can shoot. Gordon Hayward can shoot. Kemba can shoot. Have those guys shoot.
But they need another shooter too, because those are the only guys that can shoot. They have no shooting.
That's still four
on their
guys
bench.
Though, Jay.
But it's only four. like Gordon Hayward doesn't take a ton of attempts. Jason true. Tatum and Kemba Walker do. Jaylen Brown doesn't always. Like, they need another shooter. Brad Wanamaker shoots a decent percentage, but he almost never shoots. None of their big men shoot. Like, they really need guys to space the floor. And I think that's why it's important for them to either get Grant Williams to start knocking down some shots or go out on the trade market and add just another shooter, because you can't have only your good players make shots. We saw it work in Golden State, but that was Golden State, and they had MVPs everywhere, and they had Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant, maybe the three of the top 5 or 10 shooters of all time. The Celtics don't have that, and so they need other guys to give them space and to play off them, and they don't have that. And I think that's maybe as big an issue as their size deficit in the paint, because their defense, like, they help and they recover and they do a lot of things to make up for that lack of size, but it's hard to make up for a lack of outside shooting, especially in their bench units.
You think we might see this as like a laboratory game for Stevens, where he, you know, let's see if Tatum can guard Giannis a little bit?
Yeah, and I think obviously they need to find someone who does it. And Smart did really well on him in the first game between these two teams. But again, I don't know how sustainable that is because of his size. Last year, they had Aaron Baines and Al Horford to guard Giannis.
And Kyrie.
Yeah, that was bad. That was very bad. And Kyrie. So they had Horford and Baines to guard Giannis, and those are the two guys who did it almost every time he was on the court. And now it's a totally different feel. And I think Tatum and Jaylen Brown have gotten much better at guarding bigger guys, but Giannis is a different beast, and they'll throw all those guys out there. But I don't know if they have enough size. I'm interested to see the matchup again, because, I mean, they really had in the second half, they had a stretch where they just kicked the crap out of the Bucks in the first meeting. But again, like you said, you got to hit threes. You got to stop them from hitting threes, and you got to stop them from scoring, from killing you in the paint. And I think that could be their issue with Giannis. I guess that could be every team's issue with Giannis.
What worries me, Jay, is that their personnel last year was better equipped to deal with the Bucks, right? Like, when you think about Kyrie, his ability to make threes off of the pull-up. So when the Bucks are doing their ultra-conservative stuff and having their big man, like, literally never leave from 3 feet beyond the hoop, he could pull up and make stuff happen. The pick-and-pop game with Horford and Kyrie was deadly. They had Al Horford on defense, too, who was a great defender against Giannis for at least stretches anyway. Their personnel is worse in that regard this year. I don't know why anyone should think that they would beat the Bucks when they got their brains bashed in with better personnel last year.
Yeah, I mean, the counterpoint to that is that last year's Celtics were just a mess. They were a total mess. Yeah. Kyrie during that series looked like he was checked out. The pick and pop, I thought, was going to be trouble for Milwaukee all season, just never really materialized. And obviously, like, not having Horford is especially huge in that matchup, because having a big who can shoot threes against Milwaukee is just crucial, because they're going to sit in the paint and they're going to give you that shot and they're going to surrender it. But the Celtics this year, like, they shoot a ton of off the dribble threes. And so they can still punish you for staying back in the paint. It's just they're going to do it differently. They're going to do it with Kemba Walker stopping and popping and shooting a three, or they're going to do it with Jason Tatum shooting a step back, or they're going to do it with, you know, Gordon Hayward navigating and trying to draw two and find
somewhere
else.
Why are we still doing Jason Tatum step backs in 2020?
He's actually been...
Have we not learned that shit doesn't work?
He's actually been pretty good at the step back this year. He's over 40% on step back threes. So,
hey, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, step back threes we can do, but step back 19 footers, yeah, why can't he just cut those out of his diet permanently?
That's he just likes the tough shot. He's a big fan of tough shots.
Yeah, Waz, you can't celebrate it with J.R. Smith and then kill it with Jason Tatum, okay?
Okay. All right.
You gotta be consistent.
that is fair. I was a big J.R. Smith tough shot guy too.
Jay, are you worried that the Bucks will have extra motivation because they went from 1 to 2 in my power rankings this week?
Honestly, that was a talk out of the Celtics locker room last night. I figured that they were very concerned that the Bucks had read Harper's power rankings and were just going to be hell bent on proving him wrong Thursday night. So they were very concerned. Brad Stevens led off his press conference with that. He reads the power rankings every week, and he that was at the top of his concerns.
I figured he'd be a little bit more of a style rankings guy.
Waz, where are the Celtics falling with the style this week?
Jaylen Brown is actually on the list. That should come out at some point today, which is Tuesday. Jaylen Brown is actually somebody who's really into this stuff. I'm pretty sure Tatum has a guy, a consultant or whatever, but he tells him, like, just keep me looking regular, please.
So the anti like,
it's obvious that, yeah.
Just keep me looking regular.
Just please don't have me out here in bell bottoms and fishnet tank tops.
Tech vest.
That's just
right. Have you highlighted Kemba Walker's winter jacket collection yet?
Kemba does a lot too. And you know, every week is an exercise and just like, all right, I want to find some new guys that are doing things. And Kemba's a New York City cat. Zach,
I hadn't heard.
And so I always want to show love to New York guys, but it's tough. Kemba's stuff just doesn't do it for me.
But I don't know. He might have the best winter jacket collection out there. He has a different winter jacket.
Yeah, I've
every
seen him
game.
In some furs. I don't know if those furs are real, but like he's got
pulls
a
out
few
the fur.
Furs.
He's got this flashy red one. He's got all sorts of winter jacket. He's got winter jacket. He must buy a new one every time it's cold.
Yeah, some would say that Kemba with his winter coat collection is bringing the thunder. Guys, you know who else is bringing the thunder? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Yeah, he has. John saw it. John Krasinski. I don't know if you guys heard his voice earlier, but he's on the podcast now. He was there front and center for the 2020-10 game last night. 20 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, I would say, guys, is good. Good to quite good. Also, I do think there's something interesting that as he gets more and more notoriety in his second year and moving forward, that this will put more pressure on the Clippers just as a brand and as a contender to actually win the title. Because if they don't win the title after making that trade, which I think the trade is entirely defensible, right? Like, I think it's stupid if you start thinking, oh, maybe they made a mistake. No, they got Kawhi out of it and they got Paul George, and that's a championship recipe for right now. But if they don't win the title and he comes on to become just this perennial all-NBA guy, which he might, he's pretty good, that's going to end up being one of those trades where retroactively we kind of kill it.
Well, yeah, and what you heard kind of in the aftermath of the dust settling on that trade was that the one thing that really did cause a lot of consternation inside the Clipper organization was parting with Shea. Was just like, is this the piece that we absolutely have to do? And I think ultimately they did sell each other on basically the thing of, hey, we're not getting, you know, just Paul George with this trade. We're getting Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And that's how they sort of justified it internally, which is absolutely the right way to look at it. But I do think that there was a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of nail-biting about what they were giving up. And, man, is he blossoming with the Thunder. He's got to, you know, having Chris Paul right next to him is, I think, really advantageous for him. But you just watch him play, and it just looks so easy for him. Everything he gets, everything in the flow, it doesn't look like he has to kind of really overexert himself for it. He's just, everything is coming so easily. And I mean, he's an awfully impressive guy for sure.
And Zach, you can attest to this. Whenever you talk to anybody within the Clippers organization and Shea comes up, like, there's really like legitimate,
there's a wince,
consternation.
Yeah, there's like a physical wince whenever Shea comes up, like, because they know, like,
we have to do that.
Yeah, they know.
Oh, God, they love him. And even Doc is not even like, he's not bashful in public whenever the time, because he's been asked a few times about, you know, updates on Shea.
Oh, he's been tampering left and right.
How he's progressing in OKC. What was that?
He's been tampering left and right.
Yes, 100%. And he's never afraid to just be like, look, we love the guy. We loved him last year. We thought he improved incrementally, basically month by month. Somebody asked him, why do you think the veteran guys on the team like Shea so much? And he was like, trust me, it's not because he was just a great guy and bought donuts and all of that. It's because he kicked their asses in practice. Not that the Clippers practice, but you know what I mean. Like, he earned their respect.
The four practices they had last year, he was really good.
Right. He earned their respect via his play. Like, everybody was wowed by his play and his willingness to work on all of his stuff. So, you know, it's not surprising that whenever you talk to those people that they're still obsessed with him. But that being said, Kawhi Leonard basically put a gun to their head during the negotiation and said, you either make this happen or I go play for the Lakers. So to me, it's a no-brainer. Like, we all enjoyed watching last year's team and we're enjoying watching Shea right now, but their trajectory, keeping it as it was, when were they ever going to be as talent-laden as they are right now? I don't even know, like, what's the point of even talking about this? It's Kawhi and Paul George.
No, I agree, but it does put a certain level of pressure. Like, look, there are the pressure to beat out the Lakers and win a title is already there, but it's just going to add even more long-term pressure of getting it done.
I think it'd be more pressure if it was the Lakers, honestly.
Maybe.
The way that people talk about Lakers, anything.
Sure, but look.
Turns into the end of the world.
Yeah.
But nobody really cares. Like, even this Clipper, like, little downturn right here. Could you imagine if this was the Lakers doing this?
Well, the Lakers lose like three or four in a row at one point. But no, here's the point of that was, though, is the Clippers, it's not like people are going to freak out in the same way they freak out about the Lakers. It's just going to become like, same old Clippers. They screwed up again.
Yeah.
Like, they'll just continue to be a joke. Like, the whole point of this venture is, one, to win titles, but two, to stop being a joke. Like, right. I mean, during the Chris Paul era, they were one of the five best teams in the league every single year, and they remained a joke. Like, it's about getting out of that punchline and being the puncher.
I mean, you lost a playoff game where you were up like 30 and Josh Smith and Corey Brewer made like 80 threes. Those jokes write themselves.
Right, exactly. You got beat by Josh Smith. That's never a good thing in the NBA.
But seriously, though, watching Shea last night, though, I mean, and I know that he's playing the Timberwolves and all that, but I mean, first of all, like, you watch him on TV, and I've seen him in person a few times, but just watching him yesterday, he plays bigger than I thought he would. I mean, he plays great defense, or at least really good defense to start. I think in the future, he can be a borderline great defender. And you just see the way that he fits in with that team in terms of personality wise, in terms of competitiveness wise. Chris Paul loves him. And you know, he hits threes when he wants to. He can still, he knocks down the mid range, you know, at least last night was hitting that like it was nothing for him. And he gets to the rim. I mean, he's doing it all right now. And it's just, man, that guy can play for sure.
As a second year player, like, he already has the shot profile of a good shooter, right? So it's going to go up. Like, I mean, if you look at what he did, in high school, what he did in college, and what he's done far, like,
yeah, he's not a good 3-point shooter yet, but you like the shot.
No, he's 36%. He's a 36% 3-point shooter. So he's slightly above league average. But then you add the mid range where he's very effective around the basket. He's over 60%. I mean, his shot profile is good shooter as a second year player, which is amazing for a guy, you know, who wasn't really considered a shooter coming out of college. I mean, what's funny is you talked about him playing bigger than he is. I noticed that I saw him at Hoop Summit the year before he went to Kentucky, and I felt the exact same way. I thought he was 6'7", just watching him play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he can cover a lot of ground. And the other thing that was really apparent last night watching was, like, it was getting back to that effortless thing. It was one of those things where you're watching him play and you're watching him play and you're like, okay, he's being effective. He's putting his imprint on the game. And then you look at the stat monitor and he's got 16 rebounds, and it's just like, holy cow. Like, where did this all come from? But it all happened within the flow, and he was not bothered by Robert Covington. You know, the Wolves, one of their strengths is they do have length on the perimeter with Culver and Covington and Wiggins, and Okogie is a good defender as well. None of it bothered him at all because he was able to either elevate or use his long arms, and he belonged in that and didn't have any issues dealing with that. And I mean, you know, just he put his stamp on that thing from start to finish last night.
So what do we think the Thunder are going to make him absolutely untouchable moving forward?
Oh, I mean,
yeah, that's a cornerstone piece.
Yeah.
I mean, he to me is like this. He could be like the second best player on a championship team. That's what he looks like right now. Like he's going to be.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
guy,
I agree
right?
with that. Like he's that he could be that good.
Yeah, yeah, he's not there today, but I think
guys,
he could
what
be.
If he signs an extension and 1 year into it, even though he stayed, decides he wants to get traded?
Wow, that would never happen. In
the
OKC.
Thunder don't keep players hostage, from what I've been told. So whenever a guy wants to leave, contracted, not otherwise, they'll just let him go.
Well, not like, whenever.
Oh, okay, just when they completely are not in their prime anymore. Okay.
No. I mean, some guys will just leave, and then they're dead forever.
The one thing that I wonder is like with the way that Chris Paul is playing right now and the way that the Thunder are playing collectively as a group, like do they hold on to him and just carry this thing forward and see how long it can go? Or, you know, when do they shift into, okay, this is going to be Shea's team or whoever we get, you know, as the young guy next to him?
I think from what I know, if they could get off that contract, they would. Even as good as everything's going right now, but I don't think anyone's willing to sacrifice that flexibility before they know what's happening in 2021, right?
You know what this kind of reminds me of? Obviously, different levels of players, but when the Raptors got rid of Rudy Gay, and it was this assumption like, all right, they're probably going to start trading stuff for parts, they're not going to be very good, this, that, and the third, and then they kept winning. Yeah. Right. And they turned themselves into a 58 win team, right? Like they just kept winning, kept being good. Eventually the door opened for them to trade for Kawhi Leonard and they won a freaking championship. Right. But that was not the plan, right? Like the plan was we're stripping this thing for parts. We're gonna start a rebuild, blah, 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 blah. And then the plan just blew up from them being a good team. This reminds me of that Toronto situation where like these guys have a lot of assets and different things. And so there'll be a player for next, you know, disgruntled NBA star. They're never really a player for free agents.
Right.
But, you know, if they could get into the next James Harden, the next Kawhi Leonard, the next.
You had to do that to him, huh? You had to
call
say the next James
Harden. You know?
Well, look at all the assets that they got, right? Like, it's not like they're not hurting for draft picks. So, you know. The lottery odds have been flattened a little bit, so tanking isn't as valuable as it used to be. And when you're in a small market, like this isn't Philadelphia, they can't just go stink for the next 4 years and you know process this thing out. I think there's value to being, you know, a 7 or 8 seed for a team like Oklahoma City for a few years, like while you're setting yourself up to be able to make a move for maybe a disgruntled impact guy like Waz just pointed out. I mean. You know, or maybe one of these draft pick hits. I mean, if you're thinking about building around Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
They're really good at drafting, right? Really good at drafting. I mean,
he's 21 years old. You know, like that's really young. And whoever they draft, you know, it's going to be a 19-year-old guy. So, like, they essentially could just rebuild this thing on the fly, hang out in the middle, and potentially have a contender here in the next 3 or 4 years. So, you know, they've got the assets they can package. I think Gallinari probably gets moved. Just he's an expiring and they're not likely to re-sign him. But I think they're going to hang on to Chris Paul. From what I heard, everybody's happy with how the situation is working out. Chris Paul's been great. And they're going to make the playoffs, I think. So I don't see why they would be really in a rush to move him. It's not like they're going to spend that money on anybody anyway.
Another question. Did the Rockets downgrade by trading Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook?
Player-wise, no, but fit-wise, probably.
Yeah, I just feel like they gave up a ton of assets to get a worse player, and they freaked out because they couldn't beat the Warriors, not realizing that the Warriors were done and that it was finally going to be their chance.
Jay, this is what happens when your owner starts meddling but doesn't want to spend the money in the first place. So then you start saying, go get me a superstar. And Daryl Morey has to go back on a guy he hates watching play basketball. This is what happens.
Yeah, and I also think it was possible that Harden and Chris Paul just did not want to play together anymore. That is definitely a possibility.
I think that has a lot to do. I think there's something to do with
no,
that.
No, guys, we've been assured that all that media hype that leaked out of the Houston Rockets locker room was not true. All the stuff that leaked was leaked by people from Houston. None of that was true.
No, but yeah, I do remember that over the summer, that little week and a half period where Maury and even Chris Paul played ball and was like, no, I'm good. That ain't no problem. And
with the voice going up, right? Like,
we're good. The trade did reek of desperation at the time because, you know, to me, it's like Westbrook has 3 more years after this year at $45 million a year or something like that. And, you know, I just don't think he's that type of player. He's worthy of that kind of contract anymore. That move reeked of Tillman Fertitta.
What
did Magic say in that little press conference he gave after he left?
Shut up and listen.
I'm not going to be there.
I just want to tweet.
They're going through draft process.
He goes, I'm not going to be there next
year. I'm not going to be there. That's how I imagine Daryl feels about the Russell Westbrook trade. When Waz is sitting here saying he's going to make $45 million the next few years, it's like, well, I'm not going to be there. So
I'm not going to be here. Magic's face was priceless.
Perfect moment.
He was like, look.
It really was a perfect meme. Like, it was, God, Magic's given us so much over the years. I love him. I think we shouldn't have killed him the way we did.
I'm not going to be here.
he deserved it, but that was perfect. That was a perfect moment.
Oh, man. All right. Speaking of perfect moments, guys. Jade, cue the Jazz music, because the Jazz are in a perfect moment right now. They've won 14 of the last 15 games. They've fixed things. Now, yes, it's come against a weaker schedule, but we didn't seem to mind when other teams were beating up on weak schedules. So the Jazz have corrected themselves. They're playing unbelievable offense. The defense still isn't elite, but it's very good. Donovan Mitchell's playing like an all-star. Rudy Gobert's playing like an all-star. Bojan Bogdanović playing like one of the best acquisitions of the summer. Joe Ingles is playing really good basketball. They brought in Jordan Clarkson. He's had an impact. So, Dave, are the Jazz for real?
I mean, listen, I always thought this team would figure it out. And we know they had the toughest first half schedule and then the weakest second half schedule. So the slow start didn't really bother me.
Yeah, and this happens every year with them, right?
Like exactly. Now, the Mike Conley stuff has been weird. But the thing is, I actually think despite his poor shooting, he hasn't been that bad. It's just overblown because they had that bad schedule. And so you look at the numbers in this last 15 games, and I am shocked that their defense is as bad as it's been, right? Like, their offense looks fantastic, but their defense still hasn't clicked yet. And I think that when it does, we're going to start saying, oh, wow, Utah might be able to do something. And then they're going to get, you know, bulldozed by the Lakers. But still, like, the Jazz are a really good team, but they're missing, like, they need Mike Conley to be like Mike Conley of 3 years ago, and that's what could put them really over the top, and he's just not there. But they've been good. Like, I never doubted that this is the team that they were, but how they've gotten to this point is a little bit different.
I was actually somebody who picked both the Jazz and the Nuggets to finish at the top of the West, right? 1 and 2, because I love their continuity for Denver specifically. And I like the pieces that the Jazz added. And we all just assumed that the Lakers and Clippers would go through the motions knowing that they had the most talent in the conference and just figure it out in the playoffs. Like, I didn't see the Lakers being the type of team that would just not lose to teams under 500 ever. Like, that's just kind of crazy to me. So it's nice that the Jazz have finally started making me look good again, Dave.
We were worried about the Jazz making Waz look good.
Well, because, Waz actually respected the Jazz.
Yes, I did.
I did. I mean,
and even
I,
in a, in honestly, a post Gordon Hayward world too. Like Gordy was his guy, was right? Yeah, that shows how good he thought the Jazz would be this year. He's willing to put those differences aside.
At the end of the day, Donovan Mitchell is Big Queen, so you got
to
respect.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we have to respect that one. Exactly.
And we're not. I don't know if. And this is. Oh man, I'm about to sound like the stuff I hate, but we might not be talking enough about how good Donovan Mitchell has been this year.
I mean, yeah, he's been spectacular. My only criticism with him, Dave, is sorry to cut you off, but my only criticism with him is the way I still don't think he has much of a chemistry. I don't think he has much of a rhythm. I should say not chemistry, but a rhythm. Agreed. With Rudy Gobert in the pick and roll, but everything else he's doing, I think, has been fantastic.
Yeah, and then moving Joe Ingles back in the starting lineup, to me, that you could point to that as the kind of difference maker in their season, because essentially it was about 15 games ago, right?
Yeah, just about. I mean, the Conley hamstring injury was a big part of that decision, but also like Joe wasn't playing well in the second unit. Yeah, he wasn't playing.
And his start was so weird.
Yeah,
I thought he was washed. I thought, oh wow, he just fell off the cliff.
Yeah,
but he was like 2 months away from dominating in FIBA too.
Right, exactly. Well, Jay, and that's the thing. Like his chemistry on the court, his rhythm with Gobert is lethal. Like those two know each other so well on the court that they needed. You know, I think Rudy needed that as well.
Yeah, I love that Joe Ingles is like a slow white lefty who just loves to run pick and rolls. Like you look at that guy and you think he's definitely just a spot up shooter, but he's so crafty in the pick and roll.
Well, hey, and you know, I know, like, kind of building off what Dave was saying about how, you know, kind of you always knew that the Jazz would start to put it together. They came through Minnesota a couple of times earlier in the season when it wasn't going well. And the first time it was like, yeah, hey, everything will be fine. We're going to be okay. It's just, we have a lot of new faces. We got to get everyone incorporated. Mike Conley's got to figure things out. You know, he's playing with a totally different big than in Gobert than he was with Gasol. And so this is going to take some time. And then they came through again and it still wasn't really getting traction yet. And it was getting, you know, just a little bit tense. Like there was a sense of urgency that was starting to creep in with them. Like, all right, it's time to start going. We got to, you know, get our act together a little bit. Clearly they have now, but I do think one thing that has been interesting to watch in the Conley kind of integration into that group is that they, you know, Conley played with Gasol forever and it was pick and pop, pick and pop, pick and pop. And Gobert just loves to roll. And I think that is, you know, once that kind of chemistry gets forged a little bit more, then they become even more dangerous. And it will probably help Conley with his shooting a little bit as well when he gets a little bit more comfortable on how he's going to get his shots, what he's going to get, and what he's going to take. And when that happens, I mean, they could really take off.
Yeah, and I think too, like the issues they had in the past with slow starts is it cost them seeding, right? Like right now they're right in the mix for the 2 seed. Yeah, like this didn't really hurt them in the seeding this year, for whatever reason. And so the fact that they've taken off at this point, I mean they still might get the 6th seed because it's the West, right? But they are kind of in the driver's seat right now the rest of the season to really set their own standard for where they end up in the playoff seeding.
And Jordan Clarkson's been such a good addition for them. Like, he's one of those guys where if he fits, he fits. And I think on Utah's second unit, like, they need shot creation when Mitchell and Ingles aren't in there.
NBA player.
Yeah, right?
He's like a homeless guy with no health care as Lou Will. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, he's perfect. And the thing is, it's exactly what they were missing and why Joe Ingles was coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And so they actually solved two problems with that, you know, with moving Joe Ingles back into the starting lineup and then making the trade for Jordan Clarkson. Like it actually filled their two biggest glaring issues. And this team really could do something in the playoffs, like especially if the Clippers never find their groove and remain too cool for school, which I think, you know, by the time the playoffs roll around, they won't. But the Jazz, you know, they're never going to take an opponent lightly. So they're never going to be surprised by anyone. They're going to get beat, but they're never going to be surprised.
Yeah, they're just professional. I mean, the way that they go about it. And I do think that, you know, Quinn's obviously great. He does a great job handling it from night to night. But now I do think with Clarkson, with kind of the way that the team is coming together. And I think Conley's going to figure things out from a shot making standpoint. That's I'm confident in that. And so then they will have more firepower than they've had before in that group. And so even if their defense does slip a little bit and it's not, you know, the complete dominant unit that it has been, they will have other ways to make up for that. And maybe even they'll even raise their ceiling because they'll just have ways to make shots, to score points that they couldn't before.
Right.
That I think will help them, you know, certainly down the stretch and then into the
– Yeah.
This is the best offense they've had in the last few years.
Yo, by far. Right? They've been like, the best offense, I want to say, for like a month and a half. They've been the best offense in the league.
Yeah.
Their offensive rating during this 15 games is 118. It's insane.
Yep.
And they're doing this with Donovan Mitchell still not getting to the free throw line. Can anybody explain to me why this kid can't get to the line? Because
he's avoiding contact. Like he's avoiding contact.
He does Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, he's doing Kyrie Irving stuff. He's avoiding contact. Yep. He's trying to make acrobatic shots. Waz, I know he's big Queens, but you gotta put the bias aside.
He's gotta throw his body into people.
Well, see, like, this is
to
where
me, that's what's gonna take his game to the next level.
Right.
Is living at the free throw line.
But that's always the thing for young guys, right? Is they're trying to make all these spectacular plays until they realize, oh, I could just get some free points.
Yeah. That's why I'm a big Ja Morant guy. I think he's gonna shoot like 7 free throws
a game.
He's
already doing it.
Right.
He's insane. Yeah. He's absolutely insane.
I think he's going to be like the best point guard in the league.
Figuring out how to get people's
years.
Bodies contorted into ways that'll make it look like a foul. Like
I'm very torn on whether or not I want the Grizzlies or the Pelicans to end up as the 8 seed in the West. I'm very torn.
Definitely the Pelicans.
Give me the Grizzlies.
No, Pelicans.
Oh, well, we got Zion coming back, Waz.
We got Zion
coming back Thursday by all reports. I've heard similar stuff. And Thursday against those Utah Jazz, that's when Zion's supposed to come back. And, guys, I think he's gonna dunk on Rudy Gobert first game.
So this is back just to tie into the Jazz. Like, this is the one concern for the Jazz, right? What do you do when you have, like, Zion as the center? I mean, we've seen Rudy in space, like, doesn't really do a great job. I don't say that's all Rudy's fault, but Thursday is going to be, you know, they're playing their best basketball right now, and they may run into a buzzsaw.
Well, but I mean, so Rudy has had trouble historically with a guy like Towns, right? Who brings him out to the perimeter and puts him in space that way. Is Zion going to do that? I think he's going to be the one that's going to try and score near the basket. And I think that plays into Rudy's strengths with, you know, his 10-foot long arms that are going to just make it tough to have Zion get the room to work inside like he wants to.
But it's the way that Zion scores around the basket, right? Like, so he gets going downhill. It's not like a post up. It's not, you know, as a role man, although I think he's going to do well as a role man, but it's the way he cuts and you know, comes out of the dunker spot and things like that. And with the way that Utah uses Rudy as a helper, he's going to be caught out of position quite a bit helping off of Zion because Zion's not a threat to shoot. And I think that is going to be, you know, that's the blueprint for beating the Jazz, like, and beating Rudy Gobert. So it's going to be interesting to watch. And that's if Zion even gets minutes at the five, which he may not.
Doesn't matter. He's dunking on everybody.
Joe Ingles guarding Zion is going to be amazing.
I actually think that's a super fascinating matchup because Joe Ingles is a good defender.
Yeah. But Zion is a freaking the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah. He's 290 pounds. Like, he's
Zion will not be bothered by Joe Ingles.
Right.
What? Like,
how do you guard a Mack truck?
Oh, my God. He's going to use that Aussie know-how.
Zion was not guarded. He was not bothered by Rudy Gobert. Like, he's not going to be bothered by much of anything.
What are the expectations too high for him even coming back Thursday?
Yes.
They're way too high, right?
Yeah. He's going to play 4 minutes. He's going to play four minutes.
And then it's going to be a lot of tweets of, oh, this guy's overhyped, overrated. Oh, I thought he was supposed to be the savior.
People are going to read the box score.
He's going to be on a 15 or 20 minute restriction. He's going to have 7 dunks. He's going to shoot 11 for 12 and have 26 points and 7 rebounds. And at least
without a single play being run for him.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to be here.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait.
I'm actually, like, it's about as excited as I've been since the season started. Because, you know, like, there was so much build up. And, I mean, we all have watched Zion now for a little while.
And I, just to watch this and see if it would translate to actual NBA games, we saw it in the preseason and it was like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, but it's just preseason, Dave. Oh, it's just preseason. Right. You can't.
I know. Well, I can't wait for people to, like, he's going to come back. He's going to blow up. And people, it's just the regular season. Let me see him do it in the playoffs. Right,
exactly. Well, that's the thing, Dave. Like, we've just, like, not us specifically, but we collectively have just been moving the goalposts with him for years, right? It was like, oh, he's just doing this against high school kids. And I was like, yeah, but it's just these young college players that he's doing against. Well, it's just summer league. Ah, it's just preseason. And then it's going to be, oh, it's just the regular season. Wait till I need to see four championships before I believe that he's worth the hype.
Oh, he just yammed on LeBron in the Western Conference Finals. Let's see him get to the finals first.
I need to see him do it in this hypothetical midseason tournament in 4 years so I can know if this
exactly.
is real or
Win
not.
Win the midseason tournament, you coward.
Do it over the aliens in Space Jam 2.
What's most fascinating to me about Zion's arc so far is that he wasn't the obvious number one pick going into his freshman year at Duke. Like, he was literally the most athletic man in the history of human civilization and has a great feel for the game, like, steals everything, blocks everything, dunks everything, and draft guys are like, hey, you know what? Like, I think he might be, like, you know, third or fourth best prospect this year.
On that Duke team, he was, like, the third best prospect at one point, right? Going in, they were like, well, R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish are really, really good.
Yeah, it's like,
well, isn't that all of that was that he didn't do the AAU
right? He wasn't doing the same circuits. I mean, I saw him when he was 16 at Adidas Nations, and he was playing against guys who were then like freshmen and sophomores in college, and was bodying them then. And I was just like, who the hell is this kid? I mean, it, you know, this is literally at 16 years old. So, you know, I felt the same way. I was like, well, I'd like to see him do it against some, you know, real competition, like at the AAU level. I'm also dumb.
But it even happened at Duke, though, like while they were playing, like how did that team did not win a national title is beyond me. But like part of the reason.
Croquet.
Yeah. Lack of creativity.
Yeah. Did you just say croquet or Coach K? I couldn't.
Yeah.
You
know, okay. Yeah, you're right. You can hobby relate. That I'm taking up. And I think it swept through the Duke team.
Wow, you really are a Valley guy now. Play croquet out there.
It's just like, how are you not getting him the ball on every single possession and just letting him go to work? Like,
well, it's lack of creativity.
Well, part of it was coaching, and part of it was RJ Barrett just wanting to have the shine too.
Right,
Dave. I think he's I think he might be the greatest like clutch option in the NBA moving forward, because even if he misses a shot, he's just going to go get his own rebound and put it in. So he's just going to be a 50% clutch shooter at worst.
Yeah, the way that guy operates, and again, he'll do all this, and they'll never run a play for him, right? He can do all this stuff on the margins, and he's super efficient. He's got amazing body control. I mean, the touch he has around the basket for a guy that athletic, like we're just not used to that.
Did you guys hear what Drew Holiday said about him? I thought it was the smartest thing anyone's ever said about him. I think it was Drew Holiday. He said, he's 6'7", 290 pounds, and has the finishing skills of Tony Parker. And I thought that was perfect, because he does have that, like, where he can just be faster than you and get to a spot and have this insane body control. But he's also 290 pounds. Like, he's not just...
Let's hope he doesn't have the team chemistry of Tony Parker.
He's got one of the greatest motors I've ever seen. I mean, just... He doesn't take a single play off. It's like he's like Marcus Smart in that regard, where they're probably going to have to save him from himself a little bit. But it's just he has a chance to really be like an incredibly special player. I'm needless to say, I'm really pumped to see Thursday night. No, I think Josh got that locked.
I don't know. I honestly look, man, if he comes out and he's just exactly what everyone thinks he could be at 40 games. Now, granted, he may not play back-to-back, so maybe he'll only end up with 35.
If they go 30-10, go 30-10 with him, maybe.
Yeah, and if Ja tails off at all, like, winning doesn't typically matter with Rookie of the Year, but I really think, like, I don't think it's crazy to think he could steal the award. I do think it's Ja's right now to lose.
Yeah.
But there's part of me that's like, all right, 35 games, and then that'll just piss off Sixers fans, right? Oh, you couldn't give it to Embiid at 31 games?
And if voters Grizzlies... have short attention spans, right? So it's like everyone's going That's to forget true. What happened in November and December. And if – because I still remember it. Karl Anthony Towns, like from wire to wire, just dominated as a rookie. The far and away the best rookie. Jokic had a good 2 months at the end, and it was like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? And it actually became a debate for a little bit. So, like, if Zion, like, comes out of nowhere and plays, you know, just lights out and is dunking on everyone, and the Pelicans are moving up the standings, I wouldn't put it past any, you know, voters to kind of be like, well, yeah, you know, and just get totally swept up in it.
And you know where this debate's going to get the hottest? March 28th, Bell House Theater. New York, Brooklyn was. We're going to be in Brooklyn. The Count the Dings live show, March 28th. Tickets on sale. Go to countthedings.com for tickets. It's going to be all Zion all night. We're just going to debate it all night and yell about some other stuff. But that's when end of March, we'll have a couple weeks left in the season. You know, we'll be yelling at each other. Is Zion the rookie of the year? Is Zion the MVP? Is Zion the great? Is he a Hall of Famer already? That's what we'll be doing. March 28th, Bell House. You can't beat it, Waz. New York. You and your element.
I'm not going to be here. New York.
Sorry, my voice there, is all right. That was Doc Rivers promoting our live show right there. That's going to do it for today's episode. For Dave DeFore, for Jay King, for John Krasinski, for Wozni Lambert, for Jade Hoy, I'm Zach Harper. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. And also, if you're subscribing to The Athletic, thank you. If not, subscribe, guys. Treat yourself right in 2020. That's what you got to do.